Disclaimer: the views and opinions expressed by the participants of this show are not the views. Disclaimer: the views and opinions expressed by the participants of this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show. The views and opinions expressed by the participants of this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show.
It's our the first episode of our annual holiday special. Justin's here.
Howdy.
How's it going, man?
It's been a busy end of year. The holidays are when everyone wants things done 2 weeks early.
Yeah, yes, indeed. Me included.
Yep.
My freelancers have a tight deadline this week because I'm not working over Christmas.
Yeah, the workload doesn't let up for the month in total. It just gets compressed into 3 weeks.
Yeah, it does. Which, you know, I don't really mind. I had to teach myself to, you know, make sure the freelancers get their stuff in before I leave for Christmas. Because there were years where I was working, like, on Christmas Day.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I know. And it was like, I was like, what am I doing? So this time it's like, you have to have it in by the 21st or it's not getting published. And as a programming note, there will be an Astro Toy on Christmas that obviously will be prepared beforehand. But shelf life is taking a week off, and so is the stream. So, yeah, those won't be there next week, but that's pretty much the only interruption in programming I think we're going to have. So, yeah, not too much collateral damage, but hey, we got to take some time off, you know?
Hey, we work hard, and I think people realize that.
Right. Well, anyway, enough kissing our own asses.
No,
so
more.
We sure are great.
I look in the mirror and say, what a great guy.
Hey there, buddy. So we've got every year we kind of do lists, you know, countdowns. And this year is no different, although our second episode will have a special format. But we'll talk about that when we get there. For this first episode, we're going to count down our top five anime we saw this year. So there's a qualifier on that. It's not anime that came out this year, it's anime we saw this year, which is sort of important.
Time.
Yeah, for the first time, which is sort of important because unless we're only talking about the TV season, I think most of the stuff on my list, actually I think all of the stuff on my list wouldn't count as having come out this year.
Right. I mean, if you're like me, I tried to keep everything to at least stuff that would reasonably be considered this year.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there's nothing like, oh, well, this movie came out in 1986, but I first saw it this year.
Yeah, I kept something that was released at least on disc in some part of the world this year.
Right.
Is what's on my list. So stuff I saw this year, and then movies will be top five for this year, for 2011.
Right.
So, yeah, which was, you know, I thought it was kind of a weak year, but looking back on my favorites, not so bad.
Movie-wise, certainly.
Yeah, not a 2007, but I don't know if we'll ever have another 2007.
Well, yeah, that was a very special year.
Yes, it was. Okay, so we should go ahead. Let's go ahead and get started here. We're going to do our top five anime that we saw this year. I guess we'll just get straight into it. I got my Christmas tree lit up. I've got my eggnog. There's a little bit of rum in it. So I'm ready to go. What about you?
I got my green tea and both my Christmas trees are lit up. I just wish I had time to make cookies.
Aw.
I did not have time to make cookies this year. It's really upsetting me.
Really? That sucks.
I would make them now, but it's like, what's the point? I'm leaving in 4 days.
Yeah, it's really. Like, it's kind of too late for everything at this point.
Yeah.
All right. So what's your number five?
My number five is the Eden of the East movies.
Really? Okay.
And it's, they're not fantastic movies. I'll admit, this was a tough year for anime.
Yeah.
There was not a whole lot of really great stuff. But the Eden of the East movies, I had been warned about them. Everyone's like, oh, they're a letdown, they're a disappointment. Kinda. I get that. I think the final movie especially finally betrays that the whole concept behind the show wasn't quite as smart as we had initially been led to believe it was.
Right.
But that said, it was still satisfying. It was they're quite well done. And they're some of the most thought-provoking and adult-interesting anime that's been produced in the last few years. And not being as brilliant as we thought it was initially still means it's kind of smart.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Just because it doesn't 100% blow your mind doesn't mean it's not a smart show. But, I mean, you know, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen these, skip this part of the podcast, but I haven't watched these yet, and I'm getting to the point where I might not get around to them. They've been sitting on my shelf for so long, and I'm starting to lose interest. What about the premise gets stupid or indicates that it's not as smart as we may have initially thought?
Well, it doesn't really hit home with that until the very end of the second movie, so I don't really want to get into it. But basically, it more or less comes down to expressing a worldview, and that worldview is actually much simpler and a little more obvious than it seemed at first blush.
Oh, okay. So the ideas in it are not as as complicated as maybe.
Exactly. It's actually very, very simple, and there's a big tendency after they finally voice it finally to go, oh, that's all. Oh, okay.
Okay. Jeez, I thought the show was about big ideas. Yeah,
exactly. But that said, it's still a good story. And I will say that if you're going to watch it, I wouldn't wait, because it's sort of like watching the second Harry Potter Part 7 movie, where unless you have immediately just finished the TV series, you will be lost.
Yeah.
It doesn't re-explain anything. It just treats it as a very long episode 12 and 13.
Right. Okay. So it's even if you watch those movies right afterwards, it's because they're movies maybe shouldn't daunt you from just popping them in right afterwards and treating them as long episodes.
That, I think, is the best way to watch them. And, you know, they weren't released that way, and there was a long lag in Japan. But if you don't, you'll be confused, because it expects you to remember every plot thread.
Yeah. Okay, well, I mean, we've talked about this before, but somehow that managed to make it on your list of the best anime you've seen this year.
Like I said, dire year.
Yeah, well, I think my number five can also attest to that, because my number five is Spice and Wolf 2.
Wow, really scraping there.
Kind of scraping. I like that show. It's good. The sequel's good, too. The relationship between Holo and Lawrence is a good one, and it's, I think, maturely told and maturely written. And interesting. And the interplay between those two is what makes that show good. And, you know, and there's a little bit of fan service in it, but I don't know. It just doesn't. I know that the character is kind of otaku bait, but the show isn't written like that. It's not written as otaku bait. You know, and there's a lot of medieval economics and stuff like that in there. But it's a pleasant show. I enjoy it. It's something that, you know, I hope they make more. I would like to see more. I know there's a lot more novels out there. But, you know, it finally came out for Funimation after, like, a pretty long delay this year, and I got a chance to run through it, and I appreciated it. So number five is, I don't know if that's damning it with faint praise, but, yeah, number five is Spice and Wolf 2. And you never got around to that, right?
No, I didn't, but I heard the second season kind of suffers from an animation perspective. Is that true?
Oh, yeah. Oh, the animation sucks.
Oh.
It's actually very poorly animated.
Oh, well.
Yeah, I don't know what they were thinking. It's, yeah, it's not good. The characters are frequently off-model or badly drawn, and the frame rate's super low. It's not a good-looking show.
But the writing, something to catch on Netflix.
Yeah, absolutely catch it on Netflix, but the writing saves it. It's all about the story, it's all about the writing, it's all about the interplay between the two leads. So yeah, totally Netflix it. I would absolutely recommend it for, like, an afternoon. It's short, so it doesn't take that long to get through. And the episodes kind of blow past pretty quick. So,
Are they entirely serialized, or is it more, you know, Adventure of the Week sort of thing?
No, it's pretty serialized. I think there's a few. No, you know what? I mean, I watched this closer to the beginning of the year, so my memory on it's a little fuzzy, but it's pretty straightforward serial storytelling. Every now and then there's, we're in some kind of economic trouble. How are we going to solve this problem? And, you know, ultimately there he's trying to take her to her homeland, which I won't spoil the end of it. But, yeah, it's mostly the journey and you know, learning more about Hollow and where she came from and who she is and, you know, all that sort of thing. So, yeah. Yeah, it's pretty serial.
Okay.
Not something you can just watch one and done. But anyway, so that's my number five. So I guess we should move on to your number four.
All right. My number four is everyone was really, really worried about, but ended up being a very good and cute show. It's Usagi Drop.
Oh, really? Yeah, yeah. No, everyone, I said when that came out, I'm like, oh, I'm going to wait till this concludes to make sure that the creepy shit I heard about isn't in there. And right. Then it ended, and everyone said, hey, it totally didn't end with that, so it's safe to watch it.
It's sad that we have to do this, but I think we need to give a special award to Usagi Drop for taking the higher ground.
Yeah. Not giving in to the source material.
Yeah. It's it was exactly what it seemed to be at first blush. And apparently the numbers for the simulcast haven't been spectacular. As one would think of a slice of life show about raising a little girl. Yeah. Not exactly the sort of barn burner that, you know, Crunchyroll dreams of.
Yeah, and that super simplistic art style, too.
Yeah. I like the art style. It had a very watercolor feel to it, and it lent itself well to a feeling of wistfulness.
Right, it just doesn't scream blockbuster.
No. It looks like My Neighbor's the Yamadas.
Oh, man. Yeah, I wouldn't go that far.
Not quite that far. I mean, character design-wise, it looks more anime, but the as far as the watercoloriness.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very nice, heartwarming show, and we don't get that very often, and I really, really appreciate it when we do.
Yeah, you know, heartwarming is not something you really get a lot of in anime, I don't think.
Or anywhere these days, really. There's such a move towards cynicism, both on the... in the hearts of the creators and in the storytelling, that it's once you get something genuine and nice and happy, it's sort of like, you know, the Muppets movie, how everyone's like, oh, this is really nice. You know, that sort of feeling.
Because it's legitimately sincere and not,
right.
Not ironically sincere or some bullshit like that.
It does stoop to the occasional Japanese storytelling cliche, but... Yeah, I can give it a pass for that because it's something that we don't get enough of these days.
Are you going to try to track down the live action version?
I'm not all that interested in the live action version. I don't know why.
Yeah, me neither.
it's like if you're going to have a nice, wistful, exaggerated, kind of perfected version of being a single dad, I'd rather have it be in a form where everything is perfected and boiled down to its essence.
Yeah, what, you don't want to watch some guy from Johnny's mug for the camera every time the little girl does something cute or quirky?
Call me crazy. So what's your number four?
My number four is Summer Wars.
Yay,
Summer Wars. I didn't like this movie as much as you did, actually. It's still on there. It's still one of the best things I've seen this year. But I have not actually revisited it. I've only seen it once. I feel like once was enough. But, you know, that aside, it's a really good movie. I assume it's on your list.
No, because I first saw it well over a year ago.
Oh, okay then. Well then, you know.
If you look at my review, I think it's dated 09 yes, or something.
Like last summer or something like that, or summer before. Yeah, it was a while ago. but it just came out this year on Blu-ray in the U.S., and it's a very good movie, and we've also talked about it a lot. So I'm not sure how much more we really need to convince people to watch Summer Wars, but it's a really good, original, unique thing. I wish everyone would shut the fuck up about the Digimon movie. I don't care that it exists. Doesn't mean that Summer Wars isn't a good movie. Yeah.
I have it. I will watch it at some point.
The Digimon movie?
Yeah.
Yeah. I could not possibly care less.
I like Mamoru Hosoda. I just want to see it.
Yeah. Oh, well. He's got a new one coming out this summer.
So woohoo!
That's exciting.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I will say, though, before we move on, that it has a really, really good dub. And I didn't like... the voice of Grandma at first, but she grew on me.
Oh. Yeah, I didn't watch it dubbed.
Oh, the, I, they really did a nice job with it. They were, Funimation clearly brought their A game to it. They were, you know, trying to prop it up for an Oscar. I don't know why they bothered, but hey, they tried. They submitted it. They tried.
Yeah.
They just, it's just a really well done, well put together production. So.
Cool. Yeah, no, I have the Blu-ray sitting on my shelf. Maybe, you know, eventually if I do decide I want to watch that again, I'll definitely check out the dub next time around. So, yeah, Summer Wars. See it if you haven't. Number three. Your number
three. Mine is The Disappearance of Haruhi Suzumiya.
The movie.
The movie.
I thought you were crawling up the walls.
I was, but only for the last 20 minutes.
Okay.
The last 20 minutes desperately needs to be cut down, and I will be the first to admit this film is way too long and it has significant pacing problems, but, huge but, it is really, really interesting, really well done. I've always had a soft spot for Haruhi Suzumiya, even despite the second TV series, take or leave it, but it's still consistently smart, and this film plays with mood and a sense of you know, inner thought in a way far beyond a lot of anime. It's even if it's overwritten, it's still well written. And you know, I'll admit it's in the back of my mind every time I look at it sitting on my shelf. I'm like, you know, at some point I kind of want to pull this out and actually do a fan edit, just chop out about 10 of the endings.
You know, if you did that, I would watch that version.
I have to admit, it has crossed my mind. But that said, it's for a Haruhi Suzumiya fan like myself, who always appreciated its wry sense of humor and its memorable characters, I can't think of a better way to wrap up the franchise. My problems with this film are but an asterisk on the paragraph.
Okay. I didn't expect that to be on there. I know, you know, the thing that dominates our discussion of that movie is just how long and unnecessarily long it is. But I guess, you know, the good qualities of it make up for that, sounds like.
Yeah, I saw this at the promotional screening that Bandai did at the late, great Lemley Sunset 5 over in West Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
And they had most of the dub cast there. And Crispin Freeman, who plays Kyon, arrived late, and they hadn't dubbed it yet. And so I was hanging out with him in the back after the show, and he was like, so here I have a lot of dialogue in this one. I'm like, oh, God, you will be in the booth for days. I mean, this movie is nothing but expository narration, but it's really good expository narration, but it's all narration.
the fans of it, it's weird. It's like they're willing to accept that it's flawed, but they, you know, they hold it up as a really great entry in that franchise, almost as though it kind of makes up for that second season.
Mm-hmm.
With that bullshit Endless Eight thing that they pulled.
I appreciate Endless Eight in concept, but I do not appreciate it as having to watch it.
Yeah, God.
It's sort of a kind of like they read a lot about Charlie Kaufman, like, let's do that.
Yeah. You're not Charlie Kaufman.
Nobody's Charlie Kaufman. Charlie Kaufman couldn't be Charlie Kaufman anymore. We're done with that.
Right. yeah. All right. Well, so that's your number three. My number three is Garden of Sinners.
Wow, you liked it that much, huh?
Yeah. I have such a weird relationship with that thing because, God, it's unpleasant. It is so unpleasant. But the ending of it, once you're finished watching it, is where the payoff is, and the payoff's really good. And you realize, like, oh, this is what they were constructing this whole time, to the point where it's kind of genius. It's a weird thing to say, like, hey, watch these eight movies that you will just not have a good time. It is not a good time. It is slow, it's depressing, it's bloody, it's super violent. There's a lot of awful shit that happens in there. You're wondering, like, God, when is this going to be done? And then when it does finally wrap up, you're like, oh, well, brilliant. Kind of the opposite of Eden of the East, I guess.
That's a lot of anime to sit through to get to that.
It is, and it, you know, when I say, like, it's unpleasant, that doesn't mean it's not compelling. If it wasn't compelling, I wouldn't keep watching it. I mean, I had to watch it. I had to review it. And part of the reason, like, I have to admit, if I didn't have to review it, I likely wouldn't have finished it, but I had to finish it. And forcing myself to finish it put me, I don't know if it's just Stockholm Syndrome or what, but it is definitely, like, I've never seen anything like it. And that's special. Like, I've never experienced anything like that. It reminded me a little bit of, like, the Cremaster cycle. The act of sitting through it is like, ugh, but you're glad you did it at the end. You're glad you saw it. You're glad you can comment on it. And like I said, once you get to the end, you do realize that was a really well-told story. Like, that was really kind of brilliant. You can't get this anywhere. I mean, you can rent it on PSN, so do that if you want to check it out. The first movie is a horrible introduction to the story. The second movie is much better. But, you know...
Should you skip the first movie or watch them on a sequence?
No, just watch it all in order. Just watch it how they presented it. Right. I mean, you're gonna... You'll at the end of it, I mean, I couldn't recommend anyone do it any differently than I did, because the experience I had was worth it. I'm not sure watching them in order, you know, people put up these like, oh, you should watch this one, then this one, then this one. It's like, no, just watch them straight through. If you're going to do it, do it. You know, don't half-ass it. Garden of Sinners requires a tremendous amount of patience and tolerance from the viewer. And you, if you don't put that into it, I don't think you're going to get anything out of it, I guess, if that makes sense.
Wow.
But just the fact that it exists, and it's an experience you can have, and it's anime, those, I mean, that's special. Like, that doesn't come along, like, ever. Where it feels like it's more than just watching a series of films. It feels like you're experiencing something. And it's not necessarily pleasant, but you are experiencing something. And, yeah. I wrote about this at length in my review, which is on the site. But it definitely belongs at number three, just because it's, yeah. Whew. Like, I'll remember that. You know?
And just for the record, you had to give back the screeners, right?
I did, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
They literally did not have a copy to send, an actual copy of it to send out. They had one copy of screeners that were just in jewel cases. They sent them to Chris Beveridge first, then they sent them to me, and that was the only screener copy that floated around out there. I imagine the Fate Zero box will be much in the same way, of ludicrously overpriced Aniplex imports.
Are you looking forward to that one now, or are you just like...
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing it. I mean, I'm intrigued by Type Moon. It's just weird. I wouldn't say I'm a fan, but it's so intriguing, you know? They put together such a complicated, messy thing, and normally I kind of hate stuff where it's like all about world building, and they have to do all this ludicrous exposition, and the characters don't seem like they're the actual most important thing, and the story doesn't seem like it's the most important thing. The most important thing is that you understand all this ephemera and, like, details about exactly why this world is the way it is. Like, that's the important stuff. I normally don't like that. I think it means you're not telling a good story. But as my experience with Garden of Sinners says, like, once you get through it, it's worth it. So I'm intrigued. We'll see about Fate Zero. I don't have faith that it's going to be the same for me, because it is attached to this much larger franchise that I have no experience with.
Right.
But I'm going to try it anyway. So, yeah, I wouldn't call myself a convert, but sort of an interested observer of Type Moon.
Interesting. I will have to check that out at some point, but without a PS3, I'm kind of at a loss as to how to do it.
Yeah, that's the thing. I wish that they would put out an affordable release, or put it on Hulu, or Hulu Plus, or something. You know, I understand that their entire business model revolves around not making this stuff too available, so that the people who will buy it at $400 do buy it at $400. But it's such a unique thing, you know, this is the first thing I would point to if someone said, hey, I need something new. Like, give me something that's gonna, you know, change the way I think about anime, or you know, give me just a fresh experience. I would immediately say Garden of Sinners. Like, go watch that right now. So, yeah, it's a shame, but if that's the only way you can do it. I don't know if it's on, I don't think it's on Xbox Live.
No, I don't think Sony or Maniplex puts anything up there.
Yeah. Well,
being a Sony group company.
Yeah, well, there you go. But yeah, so anyway, that's my number three. We're really blowing through these. What's your...
yeah, we really are.
What's your number two?
My number two is a film, very, very nicely, delicately done feature film called Colorful. Mm-hmm. Not to be confused with the perverted panty show that ADV put out back in like the mid-aughts.
Yeah.
No, this is a feature film that came out theatrically last year in Japan, produced by Sunrise, and came out on DVD and Blu-ray this year in Japan. Unfortunately, there is no English release waiting in the wings that I know of, although there's a French Blu-ray that's on Rote, I think. And you know me and teen angst.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. I loves me some teen angst. And this is the best teen angst anime that has been made in years. It starts off in, you know, the afterlife ether from the point of view of a, you know, a soul who's just kind of, you know, lethargic and wandering around waiting to be bused to whatever afterlife awaits it. Whereupon a kid who's apparently an angel pops up and says, "Hey, congrats, you've been selected to get reincarnated." And you know, the point of view is just like, "What? Leave me alone." And he's like, no, this is what you have to do. So he gets beamed back, this spirit gets beamed back into the body of a 13-year-old who just survived a suicide attempt. And he has a set amount of time, I don't know if it's like 6 months or so, to figure out both what's up with this kid and what was the horrible sin he had previous that spirit that now inhabits him had previously committed to deserve being sent back to Earth. And it's incredibly realistic. It is absolutely like jaw-dropping realistic. I mean, this kid's broken home life, the bullying he puts up with, his own kind of, you know, search for the things that make him happy. I can't think of a better portrait of what it's like to be trapped in that awful period between childhood and adulthood and being sensitive and angry. It's just incredibly well done. And the ending is memorable. I really, really hope someone picks up the rights to it, because it's a very, very good film.
You think it has any, it doesn't sound like it has really any commercial appeal, but it maybe, I don't know, ADV chucks it out or something. Who knows?
I could see ADV or maybe like a limited Bandai sub-only release, or maybe NIS, you know, one of those guys.
Who made it?
Sunrise.
Sunrise, okay. So the animation's pretty good?
Animation is, well, it's kind of simple, you know, high-end feature film character designs. I would put it around, like, Junkers Come Here, you know, that sort of look and feel. But it's, you know, it's no Ghibli movie visually, but it's decent.
Cool. I mean, was this, when did this come out in Japan?
Last year theatrically, and then this year, I think in the spring, it came out on DVD and Blu-ray.
Is it like based on a book or something?
I believe it is. I'll admit I haven't researched that, but I'm pretty sure it was based on a book, yeah.
Huh. Interesting. Doesn't sound like the kind of thing that gets made very often.
It isn't. And it's very mature. It's really, it's an art house film and all that entails.
Cool.
And I miss having those in anime. We used to get a lot of those.
Well, I don't know if we ever got a lot of them, but...
Well, we used to get a significant amount of
them. You used to get them. Right. Yeah, that is accurate. And we really don't anymore, so... Yeah, that's cool. I mean, track that down. It sounds pretty good. Is it... I mean, it sounds, you know, pretty dark. Maybe depressing.
Well, it's not as dark as all that would entail. I mean, it's no All About Lily Shushu. It's really... If anyone gets that reference. But it's... I wouldn't consider it a bleak film. It has an ending that won't... I could show this to my parents and expect a good response, and they hate it when I give them movies with horribly depressing anything.
Hmm.
So.
Yeah, we'll get to that later. okay, cool. So Colorful is your number two.
It almost made my number one, but...
Oh, okay. All right, interesting. Well, I mean, that's not going to be on anyone else's list, because you may be the only person who's seen it. that's a pretty rare thing. How did you see that?
I regret to say it. I got a fan sub. It's the only way.
All right. Well, hey, you know what? If it's the only way, it's the only way.
The minute a version with English comes out in any country, I will snap that shit up.
All right. Maybe it will. Who knows? Okay, my number two is Evangelion 2.22.
Yay.
Yeah. Yay. You know, I think one of the issues here is that we've talked about all this stuff so much that there's not much left to say about it.
Yeah.
What can I say about Evangelion 2.22? It's really good. It's to me, it fulfills the promise that these movies had of not only being really cool to look at, but also being different enough from the source material to be exciting. And I really want to know what happens next, even though I've seen that TV show a million times. I want to know where they're going with it. I want to know what they're doing with it. And this,
well, they're definitely not going the same direction they were.
Yeah, that's for sure. That is for sure. And I stand by my theory that Shinji kind of represents is sort of supposed to embody a sense of Japanese weakness. Kind of sticking with that a little bit, especially in the scene with Asuka in the plug capsule, where Gendo literally shuts Shinji off so he can force the robot to smash the plug. I still stick by the fact that I think he's kind of supposed to symbolize, at least maybe not specifically Japanese weakness, but weakness in general.
Right. Well, that much is obvious.
Yeah, that much is obvious, but. Yeah, there's a little more to it than that, but there's a lot to read into that movie, and it's just straight up entertaining.
We'll be seeing arguments and essays about that for decades,
yep.
Just like we did the TV series, and yeah. That is pretty much the best praise you could give it.
Right, exactly. I mean, it's they've revitalized a franchise that didn't need revitalizing. It was, you know, still pretty hot.
Well, now it does since everything's out of print.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. All right, moving on. I think we can get to our number ones.
Yep. I think we probably have the same number one.
Probably not.
What's no?
Your number one?
All right. Well, my number one's Tiger and Bunny.
Oh, no. Not my number one.
Oh, okay.
That's an easy number six, though.
Okay.
But I haven't finished it, so that's another reason why it's not on my list.
Yeah, I haven't either, but okay. It still represents my great white hope.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, talk about it.
Okay, well, this show, basically, when you saw the pre-release materials, you had one of two reactions. Either, Japanese superheroes, this is going to suck, or, oh my god, this is a great premise, this has the potential to blow up and be the next Full Metal Alchemist or whatever, mm-hmm. The next big crossover. And the latter has happened as potential, but it hasn't happened in reality yet, and that's because Viz hasn't, you know, finished or started, for all we know, dubbing it yet.
I wish they would get on that.
I know, that needs to happen very quickly.
Viz, stop being slow. You have a giant hit on your hands. Don't fuck this up. Anyway.
Yeah, that's pretty much my whole thing, is that this, it's not the most original concept, and initial episodes did indicate that it would be a little too Power of Friendship for my taste. Mm. By the way, a message that I'm getting very sick of. I know how important friends are. Move on. That is a well-worn concept at this point. But once it gets past that and starts doing more interesting things with the characters and their interplay, then it really hits its stride. And it becomes, I think, one of the great shows in anime history.
Well, I mean, you haven't seen the ending, so...
I haven't seen the ending, so I'm withholding that. But it doesn't really come to an ending from what I hear, because they're doing the movies.
Right.
So yeah, it's, you know, it's a franchise, and I hope it's one that endures for a while, because that concept can happily be milked for a while yet without really feeling stale. Maybe they might want to move on from Tiger and Barnaby at some point, but... maybe not. I don't know. Those two are really interesting characters. Tiger specifically.
Yeah. No, it's. I mean, I really loved what I've seen of it, and it's the hit we need. Like, this is what we like. The minute I saw like the first episode, I'm like, finally. Thank you for making something I want to see. Like, this is it. This is what we've been asking for. You know, people like us, old timers that want that kind of thing.
You know. I'll admit I am a little surprised that it made my number one.
But me too, actually.
I don't regret that decision, because I think in terms of what I wanted anime to be this year, this is it.
Yeah, absolutely. If I you know, I think if I had the same caveats that you did, where I couldn't put Summer Wars and Evangelion on my list, it definitely would have been up there. But well, yeah. I mean, I have to admit, I'm pretty far behind on it. So yeah, I need to catch up with that. But I would really love a dubbed Blu-ray. That would be really nice. Or maybe a run on Adult Swim. That would be even better. it just seems like such a waste of potential that they're not doing anything with that yet.
Yeah, you give it time. I'm sure they want to get it right as much as we want them to get it right.
Yeah, yeah. We'll see.
Well, not to mention, I'm sure they're shopping it around a TV, and that's probably what is a lot of the delay.
I'd be shocked if it didn't. I really would be shocked if it didn't show up on Adult Swim. If they don't bite on that premise, what are they going to bite on?
Yeah, there's nothing left, really.
You know, really. So, okay, so that's your number one. My number one is Redline, of course.
Yep. Okay, that, it was either going to be Tiger and Bunny or Redline.
Yeah, well, Redline's the coolest thing I've seen in a really long time. Any medium, anything, anything. Redline's the coolest thing I've seen. It's a fantastic movie. Go see it. It finally comes out on Blu-ray here next year. Can't wait to get that. Even though I have the import, I still want the... I would like to see it dubbed, even though the dialogue in that movie is not particularly important.
That dub seems very middle of the road from the clips I heard.
I haven't watched the clips yet, but I don't know. Maybe just to not have subtitles covering up the beautiful animation.
That is really a movie where if you look away from the screen for a second to read the subtitles, you actually are missing something.
Yeah, right, exactly. It is a looking at kind of a movie. You just kind of sit and stare at it, and it's awesome. But yeah, no, and also another, like, oh, this is totally what I want from anime kind of a thing.
Right.
In the same vein, like, Tiger and Bunny, story-wise, Tiger and Bunny is what I want. Spectacle-wise... Redline is what I want. So in a way, this year was kind of a return to what I want. What I want them to make. So, yeah. Redline. Really good. And if you haven't heard that it's really good, I'm shocked.
or you're not on Twitter.
Yeah, because people are superlative about that movie.
Yeah, I'm. I had a rough first viewing of it, so I really need to see it again. Yeah. I saw it at a midnight screening at the Cine Family, and I'm pretty sure they played it off of Digibeta in the wrong aspect ratio.
Didn't they also not start until like 1 a.m?
Yeah, and they played it something. They played a short before it, yeah, and it was just in regular stereo. And I'm sure I need the 5.1 mix for that.
Oh yeah, totally. Well, you got that new setup, so that'll be awesome.
So I mean, judging it on those merits, I mean, it was too much for me at like 1 a.m.
Yeah.
Just, it's a constant beat you over the head with amazing visuals and like it's sensory overload at that hour.
Yeah.
And I was just not in any condition to appreciate that. So I really need to see it a second time.
Within the first like 7 minutes, because I started it, I put it on, you know, I got the Blu-ray in, I put it on like on a Saturday afternoon. I'm like, I should finally watch this. Within 7 minutes, I was like, why didn't anybody tell me this is the coolest fucking thing ever made? Like, I was like, on the edge
except
of my
seat. Except we did. Or yeah, except they did.
Except everyone did. Like, everyone did. Everyone was telling me that for months. And I'm like, oh, shit. They were 100% right. This is awesome. And it didn't let up. It was awesome from start to finish. And I actually really liked the story. It's a cool science fiction concept that I certainly hadn't really seen anywhere else. Told very straightforward. There's no fucking around. Doesn't shit the bed at the end. It doesn't get too complicated. There's no moe shit. It's just a really good science fiction action movie, and it totally kicks ass. And I love Redline. So Redline's my number one best thing I saw this year for anime.
And that's our anime list.
And that is our anime list. Do you have a worst? Anything come to mind for a worst anime you saw this year?
There were a lot of shows that made me disappointed to be into anime.
Yeah, well, that's every year.
Yeah, but I mean, as far as worst goes, I mean, what was the that slice of life high school boys show?
Oh, Kimi to Boku.
Kimi to Boku. After seeing so much vitriol for it, I had to check out an episode.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's exactly what everyone said it was. I'm like, oh, okay. That's as good as I could do as far as awful, because Japan doesn't really make awful at this point. They make either disgusting, which we have loads of, and it's all pretty much gels into one amorphous blob,
yep.
Or it has half-assed, which same thing.
No, they make awful.
Okay. What do you have?
Lugaroo. Remember that?
Oh, right. Right.
Lugaroo, which I hated. And I think that is probably that's the worst thing I've seen this year. The other worst thing being the first episode of R15. Which
oh god, yeah, that was awful.
Well, I was thinking about it, and I'm like, well, where do I experience bad anime? And it's like, oh, the season previews, because I have to watch so much. So I started sifting through the previews for this year, and I was like, oh god, I remember that. It is like the single-handedly most incompetently executed first episode I've ever seen. The story's stupid and awful, and it's disgusting, like you said. And it's completely, like, incoherently told, and inconsistent, and just not funny. It tries to be funny, and it's not funny, and it's fucking terrible shit.
Well, if it's any consolation, it tanked.
Yeah.
Despite being completely prurient.
Yep. Sometimes not even that is enough to save a terrible show. Bad's bad. People don't always just respond to it because you put a bunch of tits all over something that sucks. Sometimes they do, but yeah.
Well, there are so many titty shows at this point that you can be discerning.
You can swirl your wine in your glass
yes.
while selecting your boobie show. Okay, so I guess we're ready to move on to movies, our top five movies for 2011. So let's start with your number five.
All right, my number five is a foreign art house film that I know a lot of people haven't seen, but I really loved. It's called Le Havre. Mm-hmm. And it's directed by Finnish director Aki Kaurismäki, who I'm a big fan of, but I know Zach is not. And he's the guy that did, like, Match Factory Girl and a bunch of other odd, slow, kind of droll comedies from Finland. This time he picks up the pace quite a bit, and it's kind of a very About Schmidt sort of story about an old guy whose wife is in failing health. He's been a shoeshine, they're not exactly rolling in money, and he's living in kind of a ghetto-y area of Le Havre area, which is in Normandy, France. And he stumbles upon a African teenager who escaped from, you know, basically he came smuggled in a shipping container with a bunch of refugees, and he made a break for it, but the rest of his family wasn't so lucky. And so this old guy basically He basically sticks his neck out and takes the kid in, but never losing his harsh edge, and none of his neighbors who also help out lose their harsh edge. And it's just this great, very heartwarming story about a whole village coming together to help a kid in need without losing their edge or their acerbicness with each other. And I really kind of enjoyed it on those merits.
Oh, that sounds interesting, but knowing that it's by the same guy who made Match Factory Girl.
Which we'll get to in the next episode.
We'll get to that, yeah. Is that out on DVD?
No, it's Criterion will probably be putting it out because Janus Films did the theatrical.
Mm, okay.
But yeah, it's actually still in a few art house theaters.
Oh, all right.
So,
well, people can seek that out if they want. Yes. My number five is a tie. I know this is kind of cheating, but it really is a tie. And it's a sort of a strange tie between Melancholia and Young Adult. I couldn't put one of these over the other. I really loved them both. I think I liked Young Adult a little bit more, so maybe if I had to pick, I'd go with Young Adult. But starting with Melancholia, this was the new Lars von Trier about the a planet crashing into Earth as a symbolism for crushing depression. Inevitable crushing depression that destroys you from within. Yeah, Kirsten.
Fancy.
Yeah, Kirsten Dunst plays an very disturbed bride who destroys her wedding with a manic outburst and some pretty wretched behavior in the first half of the film. The first act, rather, is harrowing and difficult to watch, but gripping and compelling, and lots of yelling and angst and throwing shit and fucking another guy on your wedding night.
Wow.
It's grotesque, but it's also riveting. Then the second half is about her sister and sort of coping with this inevitability. Like, this planet is coming. We are all going to die. Now what do we do? And it becomes quiet. It becomes very quiet. But I loved it. And I think it's his best movie. I haven't loved all of his other movies. I found Antichrist to be pretty much unwatchable just because it was so gross. And this is gross in parts, but it's not it's not repellent. And there's some absolutely beautiful imagery in it. Just gorgeous to look at. Easily his most accomplished work. I really liked it. It is not a day at the park. It's not a picnic.
Well, when is Lars von Trier ever happy?
Right, yeah, but it's worth your time. Young Adult is the new Jason Reitman movie about a fading sort of queen bee who's in her late 30s and writes young adult novels. And she's an absolutely horrible person who decides to go back to her hometown and rescue her ex-boyfriend, love of her life from high school, her dopey jock boyfriend, from his wonderful marriage and new baby. Is very happy. And this is, I thought, was a brilliant character study. It doesn't really, there's not much of a character arc in it so much as it is you learn who this person is. It's really, really good. I know you saw it.
Yeah, actually, it's my number four.
It's your number four. So we'll talk about it a little bit more. Then I guess that's a good transition. So your number four is Young Adult.
Yeah.
What did you think?
I actually just saw this last night because I'm like, I need to see this before officially declaring my top five. And... I recognized a lot of things in Charlize Theron's character. It's not, she clearly can't help herself. She is clearly bipolar, and on this manic jag where this very destructive manic jag where everyone from the outside can tell that she is just this runaway freight train on a path to destruction and carnage.
Yeah.
And she can't help herself. The synapses firing in her brain just make no sense. And she has convinced herself that the path, the way to happiness, and I think, you know, living in the world of teen novels has kind of kept her like this, where she is just in this permanent state of, this is what fate will bring me to. This is what the world is leading up to. And she has just convinced herself of this one path that is just so completely wrong,
yeah,
on every level, that it's just kind of stand back, just watch the crash. Oh God, it's awful. It's such a dark comedy that you can barely even call it a comedy in parts.
It's barely a comedy. Yeah, I would say it's barely a comedy. It's funny. Yeah. But a lot of the funny is like, holy shit.
I think the real accomplishment here is that her character is still sympathetic. You know, she's a terrible person, but at the same time, you can relate. It's not, she's not acting as if a Martian or an idiot. She's just very confused has fed herself this toxic cocktail of, you know, young adult fantasy and just and you know her own little insane delusions.
I don't know that I agree that she's sympathetic. I didn't really find her to be particularly sympathetic. I think the reason the Patton Oswalt character, and Patton Oswalt's fucking brilliant in this movie, but
no, he really is
really good. I
no idea
I,
he could act.
I hope he gets an Oscar nomination at least because he deserves it. But the reason his character is in there, and I think the movie elevates from being really good to being great with the interplay between him and Charlize Theron, because he's sort of presented as a similar mindset, not as toxic, but he's an actual victim and is where he is as a result of being that victim. And she, on the other hand, is not really a victim. But is,
well, of no one but her own
of
self.
Knowing but her, nothing but her own self. But no, she didn't have her legs broken by jocks. That's where I think the brilliance comes in. And I feel like his character is sort of designed to make you understand her attitude a little bit. But the way the two play off each other and the way that their storylines intermingle is, I think, elevates the movie from good to great. I don't know that I found her particularly sympathetic.
I'm sure I'm only finding her as sympathetic as I do because I've struggled with bipolar.
Maybe so, but no, it's a great movie. I don't see it being nominated for Best Picture or anything, but it's definitely on. Yeah, it definitely deserves a place on my list, on the top five. So that brings us to my number four, which is Rango. Did you ever see this?
No, it's I'm dying to, but now I have to wait for the disc.
Yeah, it's really, really, really special. This is an animated movie that I don't understand how it got made, because it doesn't play like a kid's movie at all. It's a love letter to Westerns. It's really weird and grotesque. It's intentionally grotesque looking, but it is such a unique visual style. It's impossible to look away. I mean, it is a gorgeous film, but it's also ugly, which is weird.
And probably why it didn't do all that well.
And probably it did okay, yeah. But I doubt they'll take a chance. I couldn't believe, like, while I was watching it, I'm like, wow, they sprung for this? Like, they went for this? I mean, he has a vision quest in the desert where he meets Clint Eastwood in a golf cart full with a golf cart full of Oscars, who teaches him, you know, to return to his destiny or whatever. It is a weird movie. And if I had kids, I think it would be too weird and scary and kind of boring for them. But it is a fantastically made film. It's a gorgeous piece of cinema. I'm glad it got made. I don't see them ever letting Gore Verbinski do anything like this ever again. But he really knew what he was doing, and it's a fantastic best animated movie of the year by far. And makes what Pixar put out look even worse than it already did.
I that didn't even show up on my radar this year.
Well, it should not have. So that's my number four, Rango. If you haven't seen it, or you're putting it off, or you feel like, oh, stupid Johnny Depp lizard movie, it's not that. Watch it, especially if you're an animation fan, because my God, the animation is so good. It's so good. Great, great stuff.
Do you know if that has a date for Blu-ray yet?
I've had it for months.
Oh, it's out.
It's already down to like $15.
Well, shit, what am I doing?
Yeah, it's rented. You go to a Redbox.
Oh. I mean, all right then.
Yeah, it's out. You gotta see it. I think at the very least you will appreciate how gorgeous it is and how unique it looks. Oh, and once the snake shows up, the villain is Rattlesnake Jake, and they made him fucking demonic. It is a scary looking thing. Voiced by what's his face? Bill Nye. Super good.
Science guy?
Yeah, no, Bill Nye.
Oh.
The British guy.
Oh.
Yeah, not the science guy.
That would have been weird.
He played Davy Jones in that second Pirates movie.
Okay.
Yeah, very long and storied career, but most people know him from that. So yeah, that's my number four. Your number four was Young Adult. What's your number three?
My number three is Attack the Block.
Oh, okay. This didn't get anywhere near my top 10.
Now, I loved this movie. It is a genuinely, I don't want to say scary, but at least, you know, heart-racing action movie where, you know, aliens are invading. You know, when you see these alien invasion movies, you're like, you always wonder, it's like, why are they attacking major metropolitan areas? Or at the least, when they get to the major metropolitan areas, why are they hitting the big landmarks?
Yeah, they only hit Fifth Avenue, you know?
Yeah, they only hit Times Square.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that. And in this case, it's hitting a block of public housing in the poor part of London. And, you know, that and it doesn't initially happen, except the group of thugs that are teenage thugs that are at the center of this movie are more or less kind of pissed off the aliens into invading. And I think it's actually brilliant the way it takes these thugs and makes them sympathetic, and it's not in a, well, you just have to understand them sort of way. I mean, they're clearly bad kids that have been bad for a while, but it wins you over at the same time as it gives them a couple kind of teachable moments. And it's not in a heavy-handed way. It's really quite brilliant the way it kind of plays a sleight of hand with how you feel about the protagonists. At the same time, your heart never stops racing. It's brilliantly executed as action and as suspense. And shows you a side of London that a lot of people that don't live in London would never know about.
Well, you know, from what I understand, part of the reason this movie is so acclaimed is because specifically in London, that demographic, the thug kids, is so demonized to the point of ridiculousness. And the fact that this movie makes them heroes and sympathetic was seen as like a revelation.
Yeah, and I think the fact that it came out a few months before the London riots was particularly interesting, because it made me think of those London riots and what was happening on the ground and in the minds of the kids that were doing the looting in a slightly different, although not sympathetic, way. I think it was really kind of a necessary part of the conversation of how we treat or how London, first of all, treats foreign youths, because almost all these kids are of African ancestry. And also just how what happens when kids who are given no options act out.
Right.
I think it was, and I think it has a potential still to be a very important part of that conversation.
Yeah. Well, by all accounts, it is a great movie. For whatever reason, I just didn't respond to it that much. I thought it was good and fun, and I liked the message that it had, and the creatures were neat. It just, for whatever reason, didn't grab me. I did like it though. It is legitimately a good movie. So that's your number three. My number three is Hugo. I thought this would place higher, but the fact that the first hour drags so much makes it number three, which is still, you know, this is a brilliant, 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 brilliant movie. Of course, Martin Scorsese. And if people out there haven't seen it, and I know it's doing okay, but not great. It's basically, it's pretends to be about a little boy without a father who lives in the train station and fixes the clocks. But what it's really about is, the legacy of Georges Méliès, who was a filmmaker in the early 1900s, whose films were at the time, for a long time, basically lost and forgotten. And it turns out he's working at a toy shop in this train station, and the kid discovers him. And it's all about sort of the journey to restore his legacy and bring his films back and appreciate this great artist for what he is and who he is. And if you love cinema, this movie is pure catnip. It's pure joy. The 3D is absolutely incredible.
And if you do
see it, go see it in 3D. Cannot stress that enough. I know it's normally not worth it. This is the movie where it's worth it, and which is a little scary because it's like, oh, the only guy that can make that work is Martin Scorsese. Well, there's only one of him, so you know. But
yeah, I've been joking to people that there are only two movies. That this is the second movie that makes good use of 3D.
Right, the first being, what, Avatar?
Yeah.
Yeah, which Avatar looked great.
Yeah.
It wasn't this good, but it was...
Yeah, it wasn't a great movie. This is actually a great movie.
Yeah, true. A lot of people, it's got a bumbling, trained marshal played by Sacha Baron Cohen, who I was not particularly fond of, and I feel it kind of weighs the movie down a little bit. But that's kind of a lone flaw. Once it gets going, and it goes from, this is neat, to, holy shit, this is brilliant. And it got a little dusty in the theater towards the end for me. So yeah, absolutely see it. And it's still in 3D theaters now. So drop what you're doing and go see it, because it's worth seeing in 3D. And I don't think the 3D TV experience is quite the same as the theater at this point. So no one has one anyway, but this is your chance to see this movie the way it was intended, which is in 3D. So
yeah, go see it. It is fantastic. It made my honorable mentions. It did not make my top five.
Oh, wow. Okay. So, well, that brings us then to your number two.
My number two, shocks. Everyone is shocked that I love this movie, but I'm not. It is, I think, one of the great, probably one of the great film comedies that we look back on 20 years ago and we'll look on it as like Blazing Saddles or whatever.
And it's Pirates of the Caribbean on Stranger Tides, right?
Absolutely. No, it's it's Bridesmaids.
Oh, really? That high? Okay.
Yeah, it is. I love this movie, and it's hard to explain how much I love this movie. Also because Kristen Wiig is possibly the worst thing on, one of many terrible things on Saturday Night Live.
I disagree 100%, but okay.
I can't deal with Saturday Night Live anyway, but she's absolutely brilliant in this role as a woman who, you know, her best friend's getting married and she's the bride of honor or maid of honor, and she's just not up to the task at all. Psychologically, she's a mess because she just lost her business. She's also broke. She's has to move in with her mother. It's a bad time for her, and an even worse time for her to be a maid of honor.
Right.
And although, you know, everyone talks about, you know, the pooping in the sink. Mm. Don't get me wrong. I love pooping in the sink.
Both as a man and in your films.
Yes, in films. for me, this is actually about someone trying to pick themselves up after life just beats the crap out of them.
Right.
And it's kind of brilliant and a very timely message with, you know, the recession we're having. And I think it was very much a film that people needed to see and still do.
Well, that and the fact that it's this sort of amazing ensemble of female performers. And so rare is it that female comic performers are truly appreciated. And this was kind of a revelation in that sense, which is part of the reason I think it did so well and was so acclaimed, is because it's rare that they even would get the chance to make that movie, you know?
Hollywood, the shit that Hollywood makes is so indescribably sexist, and it's really, people don't notice it, but you take a few steps back and look at how many, the sheer percentage of female characters who are bumbling, baby-obsessed man-chasers who literally have no other internal life other than the pursuit of baby.
Catherine Heigl, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, God. Fuck. Yeah, so the fact that we have so many great, great women, truly talented actors doing cool things all in one movie is just, it's awesome.
Yeah, it also happens to be really funny.
It is genuinely funny. Great laugh out loud moments. Hey, my number two. It's awesome.
Cool. Yeah, so, no, I like that movie a lot, too. I should revisit it. I saw it on... I saw it late at night. I kind of want to see it. I definitely want to see it again because I feel like I missed something. I thought it was like, oh, this is pretty good, but not like, whoa, which a lot of people took that away from that. You obviously are one of those people, and I feel like I'm missing out. So I definitely want to see it again.
All right. Your number two?
My number two, Rise of the Planet of the Apes. Would have been number one, except for my number one had to be this other movie. But Rise of the Planet of the Apes is so good. you never saw this, right?
No, because it was a Planet of the Apes movie.
Okay. I love Planet of the Apes anyway.
Okay.
And this happens to be a totally kick-ass, smart, very well-written, emotionally arresting story of an ape who's had fucking enough. And leads a revolution, and it's the relationship between him and James Franco is nice, it's touching, and eventually when Caesar basically says enough, it's thrilling, and as an animal rights guy, this movie's almost pornography, because they literally like rip down the cage at the zoo and take the spears off of it and start throwing them into police cars. It's like, fuck you. But it's just a thrilling, thrilling movie, and I loved every minute of it. It's exhilarating. I've seen it. It came out on Blu-ray last week, and I've watched it like twice since I got it. It's just a great movie. It's one of the few like summer kind of action-y movies that isn't dumb and actually gets you going emotionally. It's a very emotional kind of a movie. But I mean, remove the Planet of the Apes stigma, I think you should give it a shot. Because it is legitimately just a good movie.
It's one of those that I've almost checked out a number of times and just never got around to it.
Yeah, no, there's a reason people were raving about it. Yeah, I think you'll at least appreciate the craft of it. Because not only that, it has, like, there's not a single real monkey in the movie. Not a single real ape. It's all CG, and only occasionally can you sort of tell. But this,
well,
the
as they're workers, expected to talk.
Well, he only says like two words. Okay. They sign to each other. But there's not a lot of ape talking. In fact, the moment in it where Caesar speaks, when I was in the theater, when I saw it in the theater, first time in a long time, I've heard the entire theater gasp in disbelief. Normally all you ever hear is laughter, as a reaction to a film. Gasping in disbelief is what actually got out of the audience this movie did.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's...
It never happens.
Yeah, it never happens. But, man, when it happened, I was like, oh, my God, this movie is so good. Yeah, no, fucking Rise of the Planet of the Apes, man. Second best movie of the year. And I think we have the same number one.
Yes, we do. And it is...
Tree of Life.
Yep.
Yep. Really good.
This movie is basically like taking a bath in life experience. I don't know what other way to put it.
Okay, so this is Terrence Malick's most recent film. He's finally making movies again. And it is basically a 3-hour meditation on life.
And the American experience,
the
I would
American
say.
Experience, and as it relates to the cosmos and the entirety of life itself. The first 30 minutes are some of the whole thing is just so gorgeous that I can't take my eyes off of it. But the first like 30 minutes in particular, where they show the birth of the universe, man, it's transcendent. It's like I imagine this is how people feel when they're religious and they go to church. It's that kind of a thing, and that it was described that way a lot when it came out, as like a hymnal, sort of a religious experience for movie nerds. but yeah, it's I don't necessarily like the final shots, the very final thing where they're like all on the beach. I didn't really like that, but it's good. And it's getting some backlash too, but it's an art movie, so, you know.
I mean, a lot of people who don't get art movies did not get this and walked out.
Yeah.
There was famously that picture that poster that had be hung up in that one theater that says, no refunds.
Yeah, exactly. And it's definitely not for everybody. And if you're not, I guess if you can't be transfixed by visuals, if beauty alone is not enough to keep you in your seat, then yeah, the movie's going to seem super boring and slow. And it is slow. It's incredibly slow, but it's a good kind of slow.
It's not a narrative. Yeah. That's the thing. And that's what kills it for a lot of people. There is no story. It's just kind of the drifting motions of life.
Yeah, exactly.
And if you can't appreciate that as a meditation rather than as a story, and you go in there expecting a story, you're going to be pissed off. But yeah. It's very much a matter of, you know, going in with preconceived notions.
Yeah, I think that's accurate. I went into it thinking, Terrence Malick, let's do this. And it was it was great.
I didn't have the same reaction you did to the opening, world and universe sequences. I enjoyed them, but they weren't the religious experience that they were for you, for me. It was the whispers of childhood for me, the interactions with a slightly off but still loving dad, the childhood traumas, the everyday life, the little pretty experiences. We forget how heightened kids' visual acuity is. They're the first time you experience anything has this just permanence to it and this like heightened realism. And I've never seen that captured in film before. And this film does it.
It does it. It does it beautifully. And, you know, part of the reason that those scenes work so well is because they are paralleled with the birth of the cosmos and the incredibly important moments in the history of life itself. You know, it's boy, it's a brilliant movie.
It really is.
Easily the best thing I've seen. Like, not even, there's no question. It's the best movie I saw this year.
Yeah.
That's our number one. I will briefly mention the worst things I saw this year. The hands down worst movie I saw was Mars Needs Moms.
You saw that?
Oh, yes. Of course I saw that. Okay, everyone was saying it was the worst thing in the world.
I keep forgetting who I'm talking to.
Everyone said, oh my God, can you believe this movie? And so I saw it. And oh my God.
See, I knew it was at least mediocre. I didn't even know it was that bad.
I'll tell you, not only is it horrible and it's ugly as shit, it has the ugliest fucking character designs I've ever seen. I cannot believe a Hollywood executive said, oh, sure, this will look good on a poster. It's hideous. But the really, truly hideous thing about it is that it's hiding a secret, disgusting conservative agenda, wherein the message of the film is real families have a mommy and a daddy. That is the message of Mars Needs Moms.
Ugh.
Yes. Not a message for 2011, where we have progressed past the point where only a mom and a dad can raise a kid. This is insulting to single mothers in the audience. This is insulting to same-sex couples in the audience. The fact that it has this nasty political subtext to it makes it even worse than it already was. Already a piece of shit. But adding that layer of intolerance and nasty conservatism to it, fuck that shit. It's terrible. Runners-up, Green Lantern, Cars 2. Yeah, easy pickings.
Well, Green Lantern is known for being a piece of steaming monkey feces.
Well, the only reason it's not being said more about Cars 2 is because people have reverence for Pixar, but that movie was terrible. It knocked my belief that they can't really make a bad movie, because they did. It's a truly bad movie. But anyway, on a bright side, both of our top fives, they're all, I mean, I haven't seen some of the stuff on yours, but if you haven't seen any movies this year,
right? Check those, 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 it was not a great year for movies, but those movies were great. And also, I have to mention my honorable mentions other than Hugo, Drive, which is not the masterpiece that it has been puffed out to be, but still an amazing, a great mood piece. Mm. And also Margin Call. If you're at all interested in the economic decline of America, as I am, it's a very interesting character study on the personalities and how they might have bounced between each other as Lehman Brothers ostensibly collapsed. And it just really fascinating. Great, great characters. The ending is a little bit of a missed opportunity, but it's worth checking out. And that's our that's our first year-end show. I guess we'll be back next week and have our recommendation show.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. So we'll get to that.
Okay, that's our show. Thanks everyone for listening. It's been a great year. Have a wonderful holiday season, and see y'all next week.